You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek test. Mason, Adam Vingan, and Connor Newt here with you. Test. Indeed, Willie Donick, we can hear you.
Okay.
Yes, Willie.
Willie is remote after having moved his son Mahoney back into college for his sophomore year or junior year?
Junior.
How does it feel?
It feels good. Job, mission accomplished. We got him in there.
Yes. All right. He's back.
He's got the suite set up with not a lot of extra room, but like six guys jam-packed into a little dorm that's probably, you know, comfortable for three or four people.
Oh, my goodness.
But that's college, you know?
I don't know if I could have ever survived like that. Six guys in one room?
Man. Well, not in one room.
They have their own little things.
Common room with multiple bedrooms off the common room.
And one bathroom for the six guys.
Oh, heck no. It was bad enough sharing it with our suite mate. If we had to share with everybody on the floor,
I have a hard time sharing a bathroom with my wife, let alone five other dudes.
Exactly.
So, Godspeed, Mahoney, Donick.
That is wonderful. It's junior year.
Yes. Of course, we will get into the Titans today. Easton Freeze of A to Z Sports will join us at 3:40. Trevor Maddich will join us at 4:20. But we do have to start today's show, unfortunately, by mourning the death of a great Tennessean, perhaps the greatest Tennessean, Dolly Parton, who died today at 80 here in Nashville. And every now and then a celebrity dies and it just hits you like a punch to the gut. And Dolly Parton, especially for those of you who have lived in Tennessee your whole lives or most of your lives. I mean, Dolly Parton is synonymous with the state of Tennessee. So we will be honoring Dolly Parton throughout the show, playing some of our favorite hits from Dolly Parton. And she had a lot of hits. And, you know, perhaps it was serendipitous, but my son Arlo turns 5 tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And the other day, well, it wasn't the other day, but within the past couple of weeks, he received his final book from Dolly's Imagination Library because she sends you a free book every month until you turn 5. And Arlo just got his final book. And I was sad about that because he was growing up. And this sucks. It really does. I just want to go drown my sorrows in cinnamon bread. I think we should just cancel the show and all drive to Dollywood and grieve together. Who's with me?
Hey, I would do it.
But I'm seriously though. Mm-hmm. I am very upset about this. So if you want to share your memories of Dolly Parton, 615-737-1025. Let's go around the room quickly. Derek, tell us about Dolly Parton.
It's not because I was my kids mentioned it to me and then I end up telling my girlfriend, and she was born and raised here. And it was, I said to her and to my family, like, she was just a nice person. Like, no one said a bad thing. You got to understand, the only thing I knew about country music, a guy living in Detroit, was Dolly Parton. Honestly, I got introduced to Dolly Parton because of the movie 9 to 5. And then loved her ever since. So you're talking about a kid from Detroit, and she's in Tennessee. So her reach was further than just the state of Tennessee. I think it was across the country, and better yet, across the world. I just think she was one of those people I think everybody would just say she was a really good human. And you can't say that about a lot of people.
The rare celebrity, Willie Donick, who probably had zero enemies. That's how universally beloved Dolly Parton was.
I agree. You could not be more right. And it was one of those moments where you feel the weight or the value of a person because of how quickly so many people's phones from one source or another were getting that news all at the same time. It was so important to so many people. I was in the midst of moving Mahoney, and all of the roommates were in there. In the dorm, some of the parents were in there, and it just was within 30 seconds. Everybody saw the same thing, and that just shows you how enormous a presence she was. Derek said it well. It goes so much beyond her musical talent, but her philanthropy, her willingness to help so many people. Like, she went above and beyond, and you guys have said it well. I mean, it's going to be something we are going to feel for a long time.
Connor, any memories of Dolly Parton you'd like to share?
Sure. I mean, I'm significantly younger than all three of you, no offense. But growing up in the youth of this city, growing up in the city of Nashville in the state of Tennessee, she's everywhere. And it, like you said, I don't know if there's a single person in this world that has anything negative to say about Dolly Parton. I'm the oldest of three, so my youngest sister, she, growing up, she was a part of the Imagination Library as well. So I fondly remember her getting those books in the mail and us reading them to her before she was able to read. Just the impact that she had on the lives of the people. And again, her music, you can feel just about every single emotion that there possibly is through her songs. You can feel happy. You can feel sad. You can feel excited. Any emotion that the human brain can possibly comprehend, you could feel through Dolly Parton's music. So, like Willie said, like you guys said, this is going to be one that we feel for a while. It's one you'll never forget where you were when you heard the news, but her impact is going to last longer than our grief of her, I'm sure.
I remember getting the final book from Imagination Library for my son, who again turns 5 tomorrow, and in the front of the book, there was a printed letter from Dolly Parton, and I read it to him, and at the end, it said, "I will always love you, Dolly," and I choked up a little bit in bed with my son reading. So imagine how I felt when I learned the news this afternoon, reading from the New York Times obituary, Dolly Parton, a rhinestone-studded, rags-to-riches daughter of Appalachia, who for 6 decades ruled country music and much of pop culture, with an outside personality and down-home wit that enshrined her as one of America's most cherished originals, died on Tuesday in Nashville. She was 80. We'll take your memories throughout the show. 615-737-1025. Chris says that Governor Bill Lee should let her lie in state at the Capitol. I mean, she would certainly be deserving of that honor. We will take your reaction, your memories of Dolly Parton, 615-737-1025. But let's talk some sports. Let's talk about the big news, sports news, out of Nashville this morning, as first reported by Pete Thamel of ESPN. Blaze Berlewitz will be the starting quarterback in the Vanderbilt Commodores Week 1 matchup with Austin Peay. From the story on ESPN.com, the move follows an extended position battle across spring and fall camp between Berlewitz and 5-star freshman Jared Curtis, who is the highest-rated signee in program history and is also expected to play in Vanderbilt's September 5th season opener, the first of 3 non-conference games on the Commodore schedule, which also includes September visits from Delaware and NC State. Now, we might have a good old-fashioned schoolyard bash on our hands between Willie Donick and Connor Newt, because Connor Newt shared this news with us this morning, and Connor did not like it. When Willie caught wind of this news, he thought it was the right choice. So we're going to let these two hash it out to start the show. And Willie, as our resident Vanderbilt alum, I will cede the floor to you first. Your reaction to Blaze Berlewitz reportedly being named the starting quarterback of Vanderbilt ahead of Jared Curtis.
You know, I think as we start this, I will say...
Oh, we lost Willie. Oh, there he goes.
I've only watched one practice. You know, I've been following the story for a while, but I've only watched one practice. So I'm not like evaluating both of these guys every day as they compete for this job. But I do know that Berlewitz was running with the first team throughout most of the preseason. He is a lot older. I think he's about 4 years older than Jared Curtis. Jared Curtis, I think, is an older true freshman, if that makes sense. And Berlewitz is one of those guys who's been on college campuses for a long time. I think he's 22, something like that. So those years and the experience specifically in Tim Beck's offense, I think, has him ahead right now. And I will say my background, I was Berlewitz way back in the day. My last year playing basketball at Vanderbilt, I've told this story before on the air, I was the guy that had the inside track as the upperclassman, and I was competing for a starting job with Ronnie McMahon, who I think everybody knew after a while Ronnie McMahon was going to surpass me eventually as a better talent, a better player, and he did. But at the same time, we were competing for at least who's going to start. Now, in basketball, you know, you freely sub and all that stuff. So all that to say, I like when a coach gives a guy who's been in the program the inside track. And I think that's all it is right now. I think Berlewitz, because he's had the inside track and he has the experience level, he's probably a little bit ahead of where Jared Curtis is right now. He likely won't be for very long, and I think everybody knows that Jared Curtis has got to play, and he's going to play. But I think it engages a guy that's been with the team, that the team really likes. Diego Pavia, I think, who was instrumental in getting Jared Curtis to come to Vanderbilt, also has known Blake Berlewitz going back to the days at New Mexico State, and he gave him a shout-out. So I think, from what I've been told, the guys really like Berlewitz, but it engages both quarterbacks, and both quarterbacks might need to play. Curtis, if he got hurt in the third game, Berlewitz has got to play anyway. So I think you go with the guy who's a little bit ahead right now. You've got a couple of games to sort it out where you're going to be a pretty heavy favorite. So I think it's wise to start and keep the upperclassmen in the mix rather than say, thanks, Blaze. I know you've been here for 3 years. I know you're ahead of him right now, but we're going to still play the kid. So I think the thinking is sound.
All right, Connor, your rebuttal. Why don't you like this decision by Clark Lee to start Blaze Berlewitz over Jared Curtis?
I think we're in a different era of college football than years past. In years past, I would agree with you, Willie, that I think experience would take prevalence over skill. But with that being said, I feel like with the first two games on this schedule being Austin Peay and Delaware, two teams that Vanderbilt should take care of pretty handedly, I feel like that's a good way to ease the young quarterback into starting in an SEC offense, as opposed to, let's say, worst case scenario or best case scenario, he starts week three against NC State. That is a significant talent upgrade from Austin Peay. Well, I don't think NC State's going to be as great a team as a lot of the teams you're going to face in the SEC. That's still a tougher team to play. So to me, I think that's part of it. The other part is, this is the highest rated recruit in the history of Vanderbilt football, the highest rated quarterback coming out of this class, and you flipped him from another SEC school where he was going to sit behind anyway. I don't understand, to me, what role it takes to have a quarterback sit behind experience in this modern age when, not that I think he's not going to start at some point this season, but there could be disgruntled from him from this. I doubt we'll ever learn about that, but in this modern age of college football, if a quarterback is not getting the playing time he desires, especially a quarterback of this skill, he's gone. He's hitting the portal. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Curtis, but I think that is something to factor in. But overall, I think in terms of game plan and scheming and things like that, I would much rather start the young gun against the teams that I know he can beat just to give him a feel for how the offense is going to work in a real game rather than go with the experience on that end.
All right, Derek Mason, break the tie here.
Okay, I think both, you know, Connor and Willie have points, I believe. But let's take it from this standpoint. The kid, you just mentioned the kid was going to already sit more than likely at Georgia. And so that was going to be a year wasted. The only thing I disagree with you is him transferring. If this kid sees that Berlewitz is doing, because you got to remember, Berlewitz only has 1 year. So if this kid sees Berlewitz out there balling, I don't think he's going to transfer. I think his thing would be, and his parents' thing would be, Berlowitz is gone next year, and they're winning, which means if they're winning, more recruits are going to want to come. Now we have a top quarterback. Maybe we get that top receiver. Maybe we get that top top running back. Why? Because our program is still winning. I understand putting a kid in and letting him get some experience. I get all that. But my thing is, if Berlowitz is doing the job, keep him in there, let him play. If y'all winning, nobody's fussing. And if the kid transfer, that would look bad on a kid rather than the university because, again, Berlowitz only has 1 year. Now, to Willie's saying, I don't think Clark Lee should say, Berlowitz, we're going to let the young kid play. Because you know what that does? He's going to play him in the first couple of games. But you can't have Berlowitz looking over his shoulder every week thinking, oh, this kid, anything that I do is going to be counted. The smallest thing is going to be counted against me, and they're going to throw the kid in there. What I would say to him, as you say to any other quarterback, you are the quarterback until you show us you're not. You know, you are the guy. We hope that you lead us to a national championship. That's what you say to Berlowitz. You can't have this care. That's why I asked Clark Lee about the whole Archie Manning situation at Texas and how Sark handled that. Because Manning wasn't going anywhere. Why? Because he knew, what was it? Quinn Ewers. Yeah, Quinn Ewers wasn't going to be there that long. And if Quinn Ewers really started playing horrible, they probably more than likely was going to make the change. But as long as they were winning and he was part of that win and he was the reason, they were going to keep him because they know eventually he was going to be gone. They knew Arch probably was more ready to play then, but no, they held him back. They allowed him to play in a few games, get his feet wet, and then once he was ready to be the starter, then he took off. He struggled, and then he finally caught on, and away he went. The last thing I want is for this young guy to be put in a situation where he's not going to thrive. And I think if Berlowitz is out there getting the job done, you leave Berlowitz in. It's not even a conversation about who the starting quarterback is. Berlowitz is the starting quarterback. We're winning. The team is doing well. This young kid will play. Maybe we're blowing somebody out by 28 points. Then you throw the kid. But I just don't think you can sort of have that dangling over Berlowitz's head because then he's not going to go out there and perform the way he needs to.
Well, the report from ESPN says that Jared Curtis is expected to play in the season opener.
But those are like, and listen, they better be careful with Austin Peay.
I know what you mean.
So you give him a little here and there and see how it goes. But when you get into the season, like the SEC season or – you know, after that second game, if Berlowitz hasn't done anything that has caused you to say, this guy can't be our starter, then you leave him in there. I think he's earned that right.
When I first saw this news, I think you make some good points, Derek. When I first saw this news, I was more on Connor's side because I thought of how much groundwork the Commodores put in to convince Jared Curtis, the most highly coveted recruit in program history, how much work they put in to flip him from Georgia. Mm-hmm. Diego Pavia was in on it. Nate Bargatze was in on it. I think Theo Vaughn was in on it, probably because he wanted to score with Diego's mom, but I think Theo Vaughn was a part of the process. They put so much effort in getting Curtis to stay in Nashville and flip from Georgia. We talked about how monumental it was. Willie will tell you, the idea of a football player flipping from Georgia to Vanderbilt at one point would have been unheard of. So that was my first thought. I agreed with Connor initially that if you're going to put this much work in with the state of college football the way it is, you may want to tread lightly because you don't want to put Curtis in a situation where he doubts whether Vanderbilt is the right place for him. But Derek, you make some good points. Willie, you have one final point.
Okay, the final point is we do have to think about one thing. I don't think they were going to give Berlowitz the job unless he outplayed Curtis in the preseason. So that's got to be worth something, right? Curtis is going to play. They know how valuable he is in the big picture. He's going to play. But at the same time, A, you're making him earn the job. He has to beat out a guy that is, I think, a guy that they think is a pretty good quarterback. I don't think he's as good as Diego Pavia, but I think they believe he's a viable SEC quarterback. And then number two, would you, this is the final point, would you rather start Curtis, see him struggle some, and then yank him out? Or would you like to see Curtis sort of graduate into the starter's role, which I think is the more likely path of what's going to happen? I like the second part better. I think that's a better pathway than the first one.
615-737-1025. We will take your reaction. It's been reported that Blaze Berlowitz will be the starting quarterback for the Commodores in week one against Austin Peay. He wins the battle over five-star freshman Jared Curtis. Right call by Clark Lee, 615-737-1025. And, of course, throughout the program, we will take your reaction, your memories of Dolly Parton, who died today here in Nashville at the age of 80. Just devastating news. Perhaps the greatest Tennessean there's ever been, Dolly Parton, passed away earlier today. 615-737-1025. Today, the Nashville Sounds take on Jacksonville. First pitch is at 6.05 p.m. Catch all of the action on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure and Social Cantina. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Honoring the memory all show long of Dolly Parton. Perhaps the greatest Tennessean who ever lived. She unfortunately passed today at the age of 80. We will take your reaction all show long on that, 615-737-1025. We'll also take your reaction to the news that broke earlier today that Blaze Berlowitz will be the starting quarterback for Vanderbilt over five-star freshman Jared Curtis. 615-737-1025. Let's get to some of your reaction. One texter says, just feels like this puts Blaze in a bad spot where fans are almost rooting for him to fail. Even if he plays well, there will be noise about playing Curtis so he doesn't transfer. One texter says, I agree with the move. Let Blaze play the first half of both Austin Peay and Delaware, and let Curtis play the entire second half with no pressure, and don't change the game plan. Treat the second halves like it's 0-0. Gino says, it may be a different era of college football, but the last 3 years, all the teams that went far were teams with a multi-year quarterback. Vols wish they had a vet quarterback to start for a little bit. This is a whole lot of nothing. Look at how bad Underwood looked at Michigan, having to start in a Power Four conference barely the age of 18. Let him pick up some reps a little bit this year and start next year. Derek, do you think we're overblowing the, in the world of college football, you've got to cater to these young, highly touted prospects because now they can leave at the drop of a hat? Are we perhaps overstating that in the case of Jared Curtis?
Not really. I think because of what we've seen happen throughout, you know, college over the last 4 or 5 years, individuals consistently moving from one team to the other because they're not getting their opportunities. And you see a lot of freshmen that end up transferring to a rival school within a division because they're not playing at one school. So I don't think people are necessarily, you know, overblowing it. You know, because it happens, and it happens more times than we care to want it really think. But, you know, I think in this case, when a guy like that gets recruited, and I don't know Clark Lee as well as Willie does. I mean, I've met him a few times. Great guy. I think he's a wonderful coach and everything. So what I've gotten to learn from him, he's a good person. So I can't imagine somebody like Clark Lee going in the living room of the Curtises and saying, oh, no doubt your kid's going to play no matter what. I can't see Clark Lee doing that. Now, hey, listen, if Lane Kiffin, I can see Lane Kiffin doing that, okay? And maybe Clark did it in some sort of kind of way. I don't know, but the guy that I've talked to doesn't seem like he would do it. So when you don't promise a kid anything but competition, then to me, a guy like Curtis, just like Arch, I think if they don't win, they know it's because they're not better than the guy ahead of them yet. Guys that tend to transfer look at it from the stand. Oh, I'm better than him. Well, if you were better than him, you would be starting. But I don't think Jared Curtis and his family looks at it. If Berlewitz beat him out and they're winning, okay. I know that we can get better. And then that next following year would be his year. But I just don't want to rush this kid into a situation where it's not like they got three, you know, five stars and four stars sitting behind him as well. You know, he's their guy. They're, more than likely, they won't recruit another five-star, four-star quarterback within the next year or two. They probably want to. But this is their guy. So they're going to take the necessary steps to make sure that he's more ready when we put him in than not.
I think the word I would use to describe Clark Lee, and Derek, I think you just described it really well, is conscientious. You asked him, Derek, well, last time we had Coach Lee on, about does he ask outside people how they've handled situations like that? And he said absolutely yes. He didn't name names, but you know he's asked around because this is delicate, right? Especially in this unique age. As Connor pointed out, this isn't college football of 10 years ago. This isn't even college football 5 years ago. You know when you've got a guy as sought after as Jared Curtis that you have to be very delicate in how you handle him. And I have to hope that Jared Curtis is made of the right stuff and understands that the world doesn't end just because you're not starting week one snap number one. If he's in it for the long haul, then he should be okay with that decision, especially if what I can only assume is the case that Blaze Berlewitz legit won the job. If he won the job, he should start. That should be the end of the story. But at the same time, Clark Lee is thinking way beyond that. He knows that he's got to handle Jared Curtis, a guy that I would bet, and I've been told this, I don't know, but he's probably been paid more than any Vanderbilt athlete up front, right, before he's ever played a game. Right, Diego Pavia, I'm sure, made it pretty well his second year after he started to make some noise. But the resources used to get Jared Curtis there, very substantial. That cannot be ignored here. But I think above all else, you want him to be in a position to succeed. And he's going to play. You've got these two games where you can get him in there. And I think over time, naturally, the progression will happen. His talent will come out and he'll have that job.
Eli from Smyrna says, they paid the kid $2.5 million. This is the biggest boneheaded move they could have made, and I'm the biggest Vandy fan, Eli says. One texter says, I don't hate it. I just worry losing Curtis next year in the portal era of college football. By the way, Diego Pavia chimed in on this earlier today. He said, well earned. Been watching this king from the start of time at New Mexico State when he took over in the championship game at 18 years old and balled. Y'all better stand down. This man, the truth. That's Diego Pavia reacting to his former teammate Blaze Berlewitz being named his successor at starting quarterback at Vanderbilt. And I think the two of you make good points. I understand the texters who are concerned about the potential of Jared Curtis feeling like he was sold a false bill of goods and now he's on the bench and he wants to get out of here. But I will say this. I have gotten to know Clark Lee from him being on our show for the past couple of years. And conscientious, Willie, is a great word to describe Clark Lee. And with the way things have been trending at Vanderbilt, I am willing to give Clark Lee the benefit of the doubt this time. If he feels that Blaze Berlewitz earned the job, Willie, you made the right point, I think. Blaze Berlewitz probably had to convincingly win the job against Jared Curtis. Mm-hmm. If there was a tie in the competition, it probably would have gone to Jared Curtis.
No question.
Blaze Berlewitz needed to blow the coaching staff away, I would assume, in order to beat out Curtis for this job. So if that's indeed the case, I am willing to give Lee the benefit of the doubt this time, just because of how things have been trending at Vanderbilt.
But a quick point on this. Uh-huh. They were going to name, originally, their starting quarterback after the first scrimmage, not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before. They put it off another week, I think, because Curtis played really well in the scrimmage. Remember what I said? Borlowitz has consistently been running with the first team in the fall practices. They want Curtis to win the job. They don't want to hand him everything. Look, in life, isn't that sound advice? You earn what you get. Don't just hand somebody the job without earning it. Make him get better. Make him get there. And he is going to get there if he's even close to what he has been hyped up to be. And I think legitimately so. When you watch Jared Curtis for 5 minutes, you're going to see the talent. But understanding the offense, the things we're going to talk about with Cam Ward, all of the traits that go into being an effective quarterback on the field, it's not just about your physical tools.
Yeah, it's not. I think the hard part, if there is a hard part to any of this, because, you know, Clark Lee may just be absolute with it and said, listen, he's my quarterback until he proves that he's not, meaning Berlowitz. But it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how they sort of handle this moving forward as they get into the season. If indeed he chooses to play the young kid, if they're beating someone by two or three touchdowns and late in the game, is he going to choose to pull Berlowitz out to put the young guy in and see what he's going to do? I think that part is going to be interesting because, you know, the kid is going to be itching to get in, I'm sure. But he also understands if we're winning, there's not much I can do about it. But when he gets those opportunities to play, sort of like Arch did when they were winning or when Quinn Ewers got hurt, came in there and he did what he needed to do. So that gave people hope. Texas was going through this with Arch, you know. When things seemed not to be going like they thought it was, they wanted him in the game. And Sark stuck to his guns and said, no, he's my quarterback. You know, this is a guy that has been leading this team. He's a veteran. Guys love him. Guys gravitate toward him. And I think that's what it's going to be with Berlowitz. Guys are going to gravitate toward him. He's been there. He knows the program. He knows those players. I think they feel comfortable with him as quarterback. They understand the young kid has a lot of talent and a lot of upside. But the last thing you want to do is put a kid out there, and after two games, he's not showing you that he's ready, and then you have to bench him. That is going to be the worst. I would rather it go with Berlowitz, and if Berlowitz is proven that he's not the guy, then I put the young guy in, and he's in for good. I'm not removing him. He's our quarterback from that point on. But to put him in, and if he struggles mightily in those first two games, you know how it would be, or if he struggled once he gets into the SEC season, you can't. It's almost like if you bench him, he's going to transfer then. So it's like I'm going with Berlowitz until he shows me he's not my quarterback no more. And when I put the kid is in to stay.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, Easton Freeze of A to Z Sports will join us. We'll get into the Tennessee Titans with Easton coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, honoring all show long the memory of Dolly Parton. We were all devastated to learn about her death earlier today at the age of 80. So we will be honoring the great Dolly Parton all show long. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in, also great, Easton Freeze of A to Z Sports to talk some Titans. Hello, Easton. How are you?
Hello, Adam.
So, Easton, let's start with this, because I know that you are, I don't want to say terminally online, but you're online enough. You don't need to touch grass like a lot of people, but, you know, we could all benefit from touching some grass. What is the—
I don't know, man. Talk to my wife. I think she would just say terminally
online. What is the wildest overreaction about the Tennessee Titans you've heard through two preseason games?
Anything that involves the name Arch Manning, probably. I've heard some of that.
That's
an easy one, right? That's hardly inventive. If you're going to be insane, I would prefer it to be creative. At least maybe think a little bit. You know what I mean? But that's just being like way too early and boring. So that's probably the most insane one I've heard.
So along those lines, Easton, there's a lot of conjecture out there about Cam Ward. And I am curious for your opinion on this, because this is something that we talked about a little bit yesterday. We're going to talk about it more in detail later in the show. We are trying to figure out what Cam Ward's greatest strength is. and whether he has enough of the traits that typically lead to being a successful NFL quarterback. So when you are given that question, what is Cam Ward's greatest strength? Which ability does he have that could separate him from his peers? What comes to mind for you?
To me, it's one of two things, and they're both mental. It's either his mental fortitude and consistency, or it is his processing speed, which both are very important. Neither one manifests physically, at least directly. So it definitely is something that is harder to appreciate, I think, for fans. But those two things are the things that the Titans, when they fell in love with him two springs ago, it's the things about him that they were most impressed by. And it's the thing that when you talk to anybody who has tethered themselves to that decision, it's the thing that they continue to come back to as what gives them confidence, really, no matter what, that he is going to be able to turn into their guy, that those things are good enough. They are strong enough to buoy the rest of his play and make him a franchise quarterback.
We'll talk with Easton Freeze of A to Z. Now, Easton, we've been trying to figure this out too, because what we see from the Titans on the practice field, in particular this past week, is contrary to what everyone saw on Sunday, this past Sunday. And when we're talking about the Titans during the week, it's like everything is coming out. It's good. Cam's doing well. He's processing well. He's hitting guys. Tate is doing well. So this is what the fan base that can't come to practice is receiving. Then when they get in the game, it's sort of something different. So from that respect, are you worried about what you are seeing from the Titans? Because they can say what they're going to say, and they're going to spin it how they're going to spin it, and they need to, because we don't know exactly like the insides what's really going on, and they do. But how much of this are you worried about headed into the season?
It's a good question, and we were talking about this on the A to Z morning show earlier this week. Like, how, aside from devastating injuries, what is the theoretical max on, let's say, a scale of 1 to 10? That the preseason can freak you out? Like, what is the most concerned about the football team you can get based on preseason action alone? And I think my answer is like a 6. And if we're making it just the games and not the practice, like the 3 preseason games, how much can those freak you out? It might be a 3 or a 4. Like, I really don't care about the games when it pertains to the starters, that is. But I'm with you that the practices so far have really not reflected what we've seen in the 6 drives in the games. And I find that curious. I don't really know what to make of it. I think anybody that tells you they do know what to make of it is lying to themselves or to you. Because every single year we do see the preseason make liars of teams in the regular season, for good or for bad. To me, the preseason games are way more about identifying the form and the character of a team than they are about telling how good or bad a team is, if that makes sense. And I know that some people will just see that as cope because the Titans haven't looked great in their preseason games. But hand to God, I'd be telling you the same thing last year when they were 3-0 and they looked good in the preseason. Like, good or bad, I'm really not moved by how successful you are in the preseason games. I certainly am not moved by how many points you score or whether you win or lose. I am just interested in what it reveals about your tendencies, your personnel, your usage, your little schematic wrinkles, even though they're running vanilla stuff, like, you know, what formations they are liking the most, how often they're wanting to run some hurry up, what they're willing to do with their kicking units, and where they like their situational football skills the best. There's just all these little things that are the form and the character of a team that I think you can get from a preseason game, but actually being worried about it, to what Saleh said in his post-game press conference on Sunday, I've just watched the NFL too long and seen too many good preseason games, preseason teams be bad and bad preseason teams be good. It really is not a good indicator.
Also, with Cam, because now I have become a believer in regards to Cam running the football. And until he proves, at least me, and, you know, it is what it is, that he can run, I'm going to continue to think that he can't. Willie's been on it for the longest. Hey, this kid doesn't show the ability to get outside the pocket and run. And I was holding on to hope that it looked different, because I saw things at the University of Miami and here in Nashville that, okay, this kid can't run. But after this past weekend, it's like, I don't think he could do it. With that being said, how much of Dabo's offense will be sort of restricted because of his lack of the ability to run if he needs to?
Can you repeat that last part? You broke up just a little bit for me. I'm sorry.
The lack of Cam Ward being able to run, how does that hamper Dabo's offense?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So it is interesting because he has such a storied history of guys running, but it's a chicken or the egg thing, right? Like Josh Allen and young Daniel Jones and Jackson Dart, it's not like they were these pocket gurus that changed their play style under Dable. They were that guy that came in, and Dable was willing to use them in a way that some NFL coaches aren't willing to. You know, a lot of coaches take guys that are talented runners and try to force them to play more in the pocket. And he has just a really high tolerance for his guys running. I do think his offense, I don't want to call it a staple of the offense, but I do think that it's a real part of it. But this year is the first for him in a very long time where he's had a fundamentally different quarterback. And in the 2026 version of the NFL, I'm not totally sure how he's going to adapt to that. I think he's going to lean into Cam's natural instincts when it comes to extending and booting and buying himself time. And I think he's going to take those instances and try to get him to choose to turn his head downfield and tuck the ball maybe a little bit more often than he was, instead of doing the like tightrope on the sideline, wait till the very last second to try to throw. I think you'll see less of that. And I think you'll see more of him tucking it and getting 4, 5, 6 yards, or maybe, you know, diving for the pylon or something like that. But like, this is a kind of separate topic, but I don't know how much you guys have been around practice. You certainly saw it in the Sunday game. They just keep throwing Will Levis at a wall whenever he is in at quarterback. They love the Will Levis quarterback draw right now. His reckless abandon is at unbelievably high levels. And I just find it strange that they keep doing that with him. And I'm like, there's the Dable that would just, you know, run Josh Allen straight up the gut 8 times a game in the playoff and win the game. But are they going to try that kind of thing with Cam? I'll believe that when I see it.
I think that's an astute observation, East, and I've seen the same thing and asked myself the same question. They're doing it with Levis. They haven't done it at all in practice or in the game with Cam Ward. I am curious if they're going to have that somewhere in there just to keep the defense honest. Let's give you one, East, before we let you go on the defense. We're going to ask this question a little bit later. It's been a while since you would say that the Titans have had a ferocious pass rush. They did have a few more sacks. They improved last year in that area. But they've changed the personnel. We know they're going about it differently on how they're going to try to get some heat on the QB. What are your expectations? Do you think they'll have a better than average pass rush this year?
Oh, I keep saying that if the Titans' defensive front, and specifically the pass rush, finishes the year as just a league average team, not below average, just average, that it's the only unit on the entire Titans roster that an average result would be a downright failure, in my opinion. You really have no excuse not to be at least a clearly above average, if not top 10, maybe even top 5 if all the pieces click, pass rush. I'm not asking them to be a world-stopping defensive front in that way, but I do expect them to be kind of the heartbeat of the team, because they do have the horses who have the history on paper. They have the coach who everything he's touched defensively has turned to gold for half a decade now. And this is what he does. And this system has worked for him in multiple situations at multiple different stops. Like, just point me on paper to any excuse they have not to be. Really, the only thing you can say is like, well, maybe they could, you know, they certainly could have a star edge rusher. They don't have that. Fair enough. I don't think what you have is anywhere near the level of concerning that you can say, well, the fact that they didn't have a top 5, top 10 edge rusher in the league is why the rest of it didn't work. Now, the rest of it needs to work regardless, because you have really, really good players. So I don't mean to like threaten the Titans or anything. I think they, I mean, I would be shocked if they didn't hold themselves to the same standard. I think that they feel the exact same way. Cause again, on paper, I think it is as objectively clear as it can get. So all that is to say, yeah, I really, really expect them to have an above average pass rush.
Easton Freeze of A to Z Sports has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Easton, as always, a pleasure. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
615-737-1025. During our conversation with Easton Freeze, Adam Schefter puts this out. Source, : former Browns tight end Daquan Wright cleared waivers today and is expected to sign with LSU on Wednesday. Wright will go from Cleveland Brown to LSU Tiger and become the first player to go from an NFL roster back to college. We will talk about this in the upcoming hour. So, because I've got some thoughts on this, and I need Willie to defend his beloved SEC. Because I think Derek Mason and his Big Ten can walk around at the moment with some moral superiority. But we'll talk about that in the next hour. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.